Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, the show where each week we speak to pharma company owners and industry leaders sharing their stories of personal and professional growth. We're now on series 4 of the show, and as you may already be aware, we're on a mission to help clinical researchers from around the world with tips, tricks, and inspiration. So if you could do me a quick favor and please hit that follow or subscribe button, it really does help more than you'll ever know. For now though, sit back, relax, and let's take things from here. This week, I am joined by Bonnie Adams, Executive Vice President at Tracon Pharmaceuticals. Bonnie, it must be bright and early for yourself over on the West Coast. Welcome to the show, I guess.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, we're having a little bit of rain here in San Diego, which is unusual for us this early morning. So.
No worries. Well, look, hopefully it doesn't put a damper on your spirits. And look, to kick us off with the show, as we always do in Huxley Morton podcast fashion, look, we'll come on to the company and what you're doing now. But look, before we go there, if you could perhaps give us an insight as to your background. So rewind right back to how you got into the industry, perhaps even before, hearing about research. I mean, what was life looking like that back then? What were your initial plans? Did you plan to even go down this route?
Right. Yeah. So at a very early age, I unfortunately had two very close experiences with loved ones who had cancer. So a boyfriend in high school had acute lymphocytic leukemia, and I was, a teenager. And then my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. So I always knew that I wanted to go into oncology, but it was sort of a question of how to get there and what exactly I wanted to do. So, in college, I thought that I wanted to go to medical school. So everybody thinks of you go into medicine and you have to get an MD and, to treat patients. So I did I had the pre-med kind of background at the University of Colorado Boulder and did that, graduated, was prepared to apply to medical school, took a year off and worked for hospice for a year. Wow. And after working for hospice for a year, I was like, I realized I couldn't do patient care just because I got too, I got too attached to the patients and to the families. Mm-hmm. But I still wanted to work in oncology. So,
so that must be hard, right? Working at a hospital. I mean, I just can't even imagine that, you're dealing with people and don't even want to think about, the end results, I guess, but how long were you doing that for?
I worked for hospice for about a year and a half, and it was more of like a nursing assistant type role because I didn't have a clinical degree. Yeah. So, it was doing very basic things, but it's like, you go to the family's house and you're kind of like a babysitter sort of, but, in a way that you're taking care of the patient, you bring them anything that they may request because it's end of life. So it's like, maybe they, want lotion to have a hand rubbed or, maybe it's, they want chocolate or, whatever. So you can bring them things, but just basically like sit with them. It's more of relief for the family so that the caregivers have the opportunity to leave the house and go to the grocery store or whatever they need to do. So it's, that kind of role, but in that position, you get kind of close to the family and to the patient if the patient lives long enough, because you're sort of brought into their world. So from there, for me, it was, I decided to take more of the business angle on clinical research. So, moved to San Diego because there's so much biotech opportunity here. I started my MBA program. And while I was in my MBA program, I was also working as a research coordinator at a local hospital here in San Diego. And then someone in my MBA program said, Bonnie, really what you should do if you want to, impact and touch the most patients without having direct patient care is work in the pharma industry. And so she kind of gave me this referral to Quintiles. So that was my first real push into this industry was meeting, it was Winnie DeGuia is her name. And so
I was going to say, do you remember who that was? What was her position at the time? Was she one of the lecturers? Was she, part of the hospital? What was her role?
She was in my MBA program and she was working at Quintiles as a CRA. And she said, Bonnie, what you really need to do is become a CRA at Quintiles. She gave me a referral. They hired me. And that was sort of the beginning. So working for Quintiles, and I did the monitoring thing, traveled all over the country. Then I went to IDEC, was fortunate enough to work on Rituxan and Zevalin. So I had very early career experiences in oncology with successful products. So, you know, half of this is how hard you work and how hard you try to be in a position that you want to be in. But the other part, a little bit of luck, right? So
yeah.
I had this great, you know, opportunity to work on something really special. And then Biogen bought IDEC. And from there, I went to Pfizer and I worked on another successful product, Sutent. So I had sort of back-to-back successes, which was incredible for my career. I saw, you know, launch meetings and just so much joy and excitement around bringing new cancer therapies to patients that would really make a difference in people's lives. And then when I was at Pfizer, I was approached by my former boss, the head of oncology at IDEC, Bert Liang, and Kim Weinberger, who is the head of clinical operations at IDEC. They were working in a venture capital company called Paramount Biosciences, and their company was spinning out startup companies. And so they knew me, and they knew my boss, Charles Sewer, who's now the CEO of Tracon, from IDEC as well. Uh-huh. And they kind of came to us and they said, would the two of you like to, you know, do this thing called Tracon? So,
yeah, wow.
You know, 17 years later, you know, Tracon Pharmaceuticals is, you know, now a publicly traded company. And, you know, we have multiple products in the pipeline. You know, sort of like having a third child now. I've been at Tracon for so long, and it's my baby because I've seen it from the beginning. So
wow, that's incredible. So kind of just a, I mean, you say lucky, but I mean, there was a bit of planning in there from your side, but almost a lucky string of events really that led to success kind of opportunity that you then took. So when you first started then, it was just yourself. And did you say Charles is the CEO at Tracon?
Charles Sewer, Dr. Charles Sewer.
It was just the two of you. So what, I mean, what did business look like then? I mean, like, again, I often speak to startups and they're looking to raise capital. There's a lot of things going on and there's this whole hustle culture that goes with it. What was it like when you were in the trenches, perhaps back in those beginning days? I mean, do you remember? Because I guess going from somewhere like Pfizer, you know, if you wanted to, you could probably stay there for life, right?
Yep.
And you've decided that actually you're going to get into startup world. What was going through your head to start with?
I mean, it's, you know, I have to be honest and say it was a little naive. I wasn't completely aware of what I was getting myself into, but I've always had an entrepreneurial, you know, I can do it, I can jump in and make this happen sort of personality. So it's in my nature, but you're absolutely right. I went from the largest pharmaceutical company in the world to the very smallest, you know, biotech company in the world overnight. You know, so all of the things that I was comfortable with in my career, from Quintiles to IDEC to Pfizer, you know, SOPs and all these things, I had nothing. We did not have anything. So it was very, you know, okay, well, we have to do this. I guess we should write an SOP about it, you know, and oh, we have to do that. Okay, you really had to think on your feet. And
was that quite weird then? Because I guess probably that was all catered for at Pfizer. You didn't even have to think about that. All the SOPs would have been there. You just followed protocol. It was, you know, very standardized across the board, I can imagine, to the complete opposite.
Right. So we, you know, we purchased SOPs. And then, you know, Bert Liang and Kim Weinberger did have some SOPs already written for their startup companies as they were spinning them out, which was helpful, you know, but yeah, certainly putting the process in place was interesting. And we kind of did everything just in time. So when I first started, we were just doing animal studies, which is not something I had ever done. So the first thing I did was I actually took a certificate program at UCSD here in San Diego. They have a really great clinical trials program, and it was focused just on non-clinical studies. So I was able to take talks and, you know, all the studies that needed to, you know, that you would run in animal trials. I was taking the classes at UCSD while I was trying to help and oversee the vendor that was actually doing that work for us at Tracon. So it's a little bit crazy, but
you did embrace the startup hustle then, didn't you? If you're juggling kind of all of that. Look, I'm interested because you said you've always had a bit of this entrepreneurial spirit, and clearly you did, because you went from, you know, this behemoth of Pfizer to two people and having to do everything yourself. Where, I mean, have you got any idea where that has come from? I mean, if you don't mind me asking, I mean, were your parents, you know, entrepreneurial? Was it friends? Was there any mentors or inspiration that allowed you to do it? Because I think it takes a certain individual to have that mindset.
I mean, I don't know, that's hard to answer, but I can say that as a young person, I went through a lot of change. So, you know, I've never been afraid of change. And I guess maybe that just has enabled me to trust that I can figure it out. And, you know, one of the things I always tell all my employees and anybody that I've worked with in this business is that, you know, no, there's nothing that you can count on. There's no guarantee in the business except for change. And so you really have to be that kind of person to work in this industry. You have to roll with the punches because, you know, today we're planning to do XYZ and then you realize there's some toxicity. And so you scrap the whole program, or, you know, it's even better efficacy than you planned. And so hurry up. We've got to get all of the data together and, you know, put all of our effort into pushing things forward faster than we had planned. Or there's always business reasons why, you know, things don't work out. So, you know, you write a protocol, you design a study, and I promise you, you will amend it. So you never should go into this with the idea that I do it the first time and it's going to be just like I said. It's always going to change. So I guess maybe for me, you know, I've just been accepting of that and I know that. And so it's made it easier for me to just sort of roll with the punches and say, okay, this is different. I can figure it out, you know.
Fair play. Yeah, as I say, I mean, it takes a certain type of individual to like that, because I mean, so many people like that stability, you know, like that knowing what's going on. But you've almost kind of said, you know what, there's always going to be something that I don't know what's going on. So just kind of bring it, which is pretty a pretty cool way to be. I always, yeah, as I say, I always envisage startup life as, you know, the hustle, sleeping in the office, all of that stuff that you hear about. But what were the best parts for yourself in those early years, and what were the worst?
Well, for us at TradeCon, I would say the hardest was probably the 2008 economic downturn. You know, we had good data at that time, but unfortunately we couldn't raise money just because of the markets. So that was really hard. And my CEO did sleep on the couch.
What, in the TradeCon office?
I did walk in. Yeah, you know, because he had meetings like late at night, all night. And he just did everything in his power to keep us going. And
wow.
And so did I. But, you know, we ended up bringing all of our operations in-house. So one of the really unique things about TradeCon Pharmaceuticals is we don't work with contract research organizations. We do everything administrative in nature ourselves in-house. And so what that means is we have all of our own validated systems. We've really used technology to our advantage, and that all of our systems are integrated with each other. So we do not have any effort redundancy. You know, so for example, data is entered in our EDC system. If an SAE happens, it automatically pushes into our safety system. There isn't reconciliation between the systems because they talk to each other. These kinds of efficiencies, they don't exist across the, you know, most of the pharma companies. And the fact that we don't use CROs, and in 2008 that we really pulled everything in-house to do it ourselves, it is, you know, at least 30% cheaper, depending on the phase of a study, to do it yourself. I think our industry is just lazy. People throw it over the fence. They don't have to think about it. They give it to a CRO. The CRO does the work. And, you know, the poor CROs, they're just trying to get by and, you know, do their job too, right? But they don't understand the product as well because they don't own it. And there's always timeline delays and things. And when you do it yourself, and you use your own staff that you would have normally used to police the CRO anyway, it's just cheaper. So that was what we did in 2008. We brought everything in house.
Interesting one, and I like the idea, because I've often said, look, I run a recruitment business, and you know, we have clients that are sponsors, we have clients that are CROs, we have clients that are sites, and I often think, if a CRO is coming to us for a CPM or a CRA, and then they're making money on it that goes to the sponsor, why did the sponsor bring in the CRO when they could just go direct either to the individuals or to a recruiter and kind of cut out that middleman? So it seems right. that you're already doing that. Why? I guess perhaps I don't know enough, Bonnie, but why don't more people do that?
Yeah, well, I think the hardest part is really bringing the system in-house,
right?
Because it is quite complicated. So, you know, you have to follow regulations in terms of how data is stored and maintained and audit trailed and, you know, viewable and available for you know, inspection. So that's 21 CFR Part 11. Your systems must be compliant with that. Mm-hmm. And getting those systems online yourself requires a special staff. So at TradeCon, we have someone who's in charge of computer system validation. We're a small company. Small companies do not have that job role in-house. That is just not something that happens. Uh-huh. But because we have our own systems, you know, we do. So, it's biting off that chunk that I think is really hard for people. And, you know, in this world that we're living in now, it's like our smartphones can do everything, right? Why Absolutely. Not use technology to our advantage to make things happen quickly and efficiently within the drug development industry? Mm-hmm. In fact, I mean, I, you know, just did a talk a couple weeks ago about this, but we really need to work on lowering the price of drugs and trying to find a way to develop drugs cheaper. And there's the answer is twofold. One, do it yourself without a CRO. And two, technology. So mm-hmm. systems that can help us to do this more efficiently are out there. They're available. You know, they need to be integrated to work right. And you don't need every technology that's offered to you because there's an app for everything, even in the pharma business. There's all kinds of stuff that you can do that's outside the scope of necessary. But you use the necessary systems, you can do it a lot cheaper. People are afraid of trying to do that. It is mm-hmm. hard. It takes time. But it is possible, it's just a case of naive willingness.
Yeah, I guess it's a case of just trying to work smart then by the sounds of things. It's perhaps a little bit more difficult to set it up because you have to work out how to do it in-house. But once you've done it, it's cheaper, easier to understand because it's all yours and it's your systems, your processes.
Right.
And I guess, kind of if you can crack it, it's win-win. I guess that's the special bit there, isn't it? It's making sure that you've got the right people that can do it in-house. So, it sounds like that's how you kind of, came through the other side when it was the 2008
That's nightmare. How we survived it. Yeah, we already had the people in-house that were policing the CRO, if you will. And so instead of them policing the CRO, they just did the work.
Yeah.
We went down to paper CRFs for a little while. So then had to transition into an EDC system and get everything, all the data actually loaded into the system. And, so it was real work, but now we're off and running. We've been running trials in-house on our own independently for 11, 12 years now. And, we've run multiple global randomized studies and phase 1, 2, whatever, successfully. And, so now you're off and running. Then once you get, like you said, once you get it set up and you're off and running, then you're off and running. So
amazing. So look, what do things now look like then? So it was two of you when you started. You've clearly had to, as you said yourself, roll with the punches. Mm-hmm. How are things going? You mentioned global studies there, doing things in-house. Is there any particular therapeutic focus? What's the kind of the mission or the vision for TRACON? How do things look now?
Well, we have our lead product is envafolimab that we're currently working on. We're in a pivotal study in sarcoma, two types of sarcoma, UPS and MFS.
Mm-hmm.
As a small company, it's easier to focus on the more rare oncology types that bigger pharma wouldn't necessarily put the energy and time and money into. Because we can, and also because we have an in-house model, we can do it cheaper and work on these rare indications. The other piece is we're really focused on trying to improve the quality of life. So, if you have cancer, giving a person 6 months more to live, but they're bedridden and really sick is not fun or worth it. So quality of life is another thing that's really a part of, you know, what we're our mission at Tricon. So envafolimab is a subcutaneous PD-L1 inhibitor. There are other PD-L1 inhibitors on the market. It's, you know, one of the hugest.
You would lose me there on it again. I'm not a scientist or a clinical research myself. I can't confess that I know what you were talking about with that, but that's the product, that's the drug that you are working on, I'm assuming.
Yeah, exactly. And so anyway, there's other drugs in the class that are, mm-hmm. you know, blockbuster drugs right now that are, you know, in the market, but they're given through IV infusion. So you have to go see your doctor in the doctor's office, mm-hmm. and then you go to the infusion suite or infusion center at the hospital to get your, you know, 1-hour-ish infusion. And that takes time because you have to wait for your slot, go in, do it. They check on you after, and then you leave. Mm-hmm. Envafolimab is a subcutaneous injection. So it's like getting a flu shot. You know, you just go see your doctor, one stop. Hi, they check everything, you know, look at your labs from last visit or your CT scans, quick shot, and you leave. So it is an improvement in quality of life as well, which is something that, you know, we're very interested in trying to do for oncology patients.
Cool. So, I mean, yeah. I guess that's really welcome. I mean, do you ever get kind of these individuals, I guess you're not so patient, you know, facing as you were when you're working at the hospice and things, but you must get like thank you letters and things like that. I mean, what sort of feedback do you get? Is there much of it, or because you're now removed and behind the scenes a little, do you not? I guess it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? You know, this, do I want to see the patients for the good part, but it's a struggle dealing with, yeah, the not so positive news. How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, it's more, that's a delicate issue in drug development in general, because, you know, we are not supposed to have contact with the patient on purpose. So we don't know their names or addresses or any information about them at all. They're given a number as far as what the sponsor sees, mm-hmm. and that is for the protection of the patient. And when the patient signs informed consent, they sign up and they know that our staff may see their name and their information when they're reviewing records to make sure our data is correct in our system, but we would mm-hmm. never collect their name or their personal information. It's prohibited.
Yeah.
However, the patients do, you know, sometimes write letters or have stories that they share with their own doctor. So, mm-hmm. you know, we have whatever hospital participating in our study. They would get that feedback from their patients. And then the doctors will sometimes send us emails saying, you know, my patient, ABC, just wanted you to know that they were able to have Christmas with their family. And they're so thankful for your efforts. And then that's part of it. But then once you get into the, you know, post-marketing, you know, side of it and a drug is approved, there are definitely patient advocates. There are patients who have been on the product that would like to be a part of marketing because they're so proud that this drug has helped them so much. So I remember being at Pfizer and when Sutent was approved and we had a patient come to our launch meeting and there's two patients that came to the launch meeting and they were there kind of like to pep up the sales force to say, hi, I'm living proof. This drug that has been developed that you guys are going to put out there in the market has saved my life, you know?
Wow.
So that was really cool. So there are rare times when the patient piece comes in, but for the most part, it's on purpose. We don't.
So. Yeah, fair enough. I mean, that experience at Pfizer, would you say that's perhaps been one of the career highs for you? You know, I always ask people about their biggest achievements, biggest success stories along the way. Would that be, that's got to be up there, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I remember standing in the hallway in Pfizer, the Sutent team and our head of regulatory affairs received a letter from FDA and she was reading the letter in the hallway and we had received approval for two indications in the same letter. For Sutent. And that doesn't happen. That is, you know, a very rare occurrence. And the explosion of excitement, and there was, you know, maybe like 10 or 12 of us standing in the hallway around her while she was reading this letter out loud. And it was just so, I mean, I can't really, you know, explain the feeling, except that all my long hours of watching the cleaning crew vacuum the floors at Pfizer was actually worth it.
No, that must be amazing. I mean, I get excited enough when we, you know, when we're making placements and people are accepting jobs with us, or I'm saying, oh, you've, you know, that you've got the offer. Like any small win for me, I mean, maybe I'm just a winning junkie, but I'm like, I love that sort of thing. So that must have been amazing, particularly when you put in so much effort to things and it pays off. So look, I love hearing that sort of thing.
I have to give you one more though. The other one I would say is when Tracon went public, we did fill my CEO's office with green and blue balloons. Those are the colors of our, you know, logo.
Yeah.
Anyway, and so it was filled all the way to the ceiling. So when you open the door, all the balloons just fell out like onto the floor. When he came back, you know, from the roadshow, from going public, and that was really amazing too, to go through that experience of, you know, with the VC companies and the celebration of actually successfully going public, because it's huge. And to be a part of that, I hadn't ever seen that business side of things. That's a really neat thing about working at Tracon, because we're small and I've been there from the beginning, that, you know, I've been able to use my MBA more because I am seeing the business side too. So it's like, I'm seeing them come together. So certainly being part of going public is pretty amazing too.
Perhaps the other thing that we've had since then is the dreaded C word, COVID.
Yeah.
How did you folks cope with that? Because I think, I mean, that's to an extent where this podcast was born. It was as a result of COVID, me asking people how they, you know, managed things, people asking me what's going on. How did you, you know, you've talked us through the story of 2008 and how you juggled that. How was the kind of COVID immediate times at that couple of years ago? What did that look like for yourselves?
Yeah, I mean, COVID, it's been crazy for everybody, right? But I can say that there actually have been some silver linings with respect to the push that we had because of COVID to use technology. I'm going to keep saying that in this, you know, interview here. Technology, you know, can really help you, but it's true. I mean, you know, I know that remote monitoring isn't allowed in Europe, but, you know, in the United States, gosh, it's like we were sending monitors, you know, into snowstorms and having a day delay and paying them by the hour to go visit a hospital to look at pieces of paper that were patient charts. COVID pushed us to remote monitor, which means that now monitors can, you know, work from home with appropriate security. But be able to do the remote monitoring and not have to travel across the country to look at paper. You know, they can see it on their screen and everything is electronic. Everything has dual authentication to log in and, you know, it is encrypted and so forth. But they can do it from, you know, without having to get on the airplane to do it. And that not only obviously efficiency wise, you know, saves us a lot of time, but, you know, it's very cost effective too. So the monitors can do more with their time because they're not just sitting on an airplane. You know, there are reasons that you still have to go to the site to monitor because there are physical things like drug supply and other supplies that, you know, you do need to be able to go in person to see from time to time. But as far as, you know, the majority of that position, you can actually do it remotely now. But for Tracon in general, I would say that we had a very kind of hard policy of, if you're not in the office, you're not getting work done. But we've made a complete, you know, 360 turn on this. And, you know, we have half the office space now and, you know, really just let people work from home. And I have to tell you, it's crazy, but I really think people are a lot more productive. Not just a little bit, but a lot more productive. And you know, it's because they have the freedom to change their laundry in between meetings. you know, it's silly, but I just think that giving people that quality of life is great. And then we've really seen an improvement actually from changing our business model in that way.
Awesome. So kind of it's the same again, isn't it? But just different timing. You've worked smart, you've utilized the technology available, and you've made slight adaptions to make things better, cheaper, more cost effective. And really, as you've said yourself, just kind of makes sense. So all very interesting. And look, I guess probably the other thing, you mentioned it, you're touching on it there, that you were perhaps previously a very much in the office, that's where we get the work done. And that mentality has changed. You recognize that just a second ago. What else would you say that you've learned about yourself since starting out, since being on this journey of, you know, the two of you, yourself and Charles, to, you know, now being a public trading company? What else have you learned about yourself, Bonnie? There must be quite a few things, you know, having gone on this wild journey of yours.
Yeah, that's a hard question. I mean, I think that I've learned to trust myself more. You know, when I was younger in my career, I just always thought that I was young, right? And I maybe didn't have the right answer, and I would kind of defer to other people's thoughts and decisions. But, you know, as I've matured, and that's just a life thing too, but I definitely feel more confident in my decisions. I feel, you know, like I believe in myself, you know, more as time has gone on. And it's not that I didn't before. I guess maybe before it was just more I naively would jump into things, and now it's more conscious, but knowing that I can and having the experience behind me, you know, to do it. Yeah, but I would probably tell myself, if I gave myself some advice, I would say, you know, trust yourself more. Is looking back at my younger self, I'd say, you know, trust yourself and believe in yourself more in your decisions.
I have to agree with that. I guess I think the more experience you get, I don't know, sometimes I think that you just realize that everyone to an extent is winging it. So you may as well just get on and do it, because then once you've started doing it, it just starts to fall into place. And, you know, to take a leaf out of your book, you just roll with the punches and just keep going, and you will work it out as you go. I think that's what we do. So look, what's next for Tracon in terms of the next, you know, the foreseeable future, long term? What's the plan for you and the business moving forward?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing is the outcome of this pivotal trial that we're in currently in sarcoma with empafolimab. So the outcome of that trial will be, you know, really big for us. But, you know, we are always looking for new novel oncology products that can really make a difference in patients' lives and improve quality of life for the patients at the same time. So, you know, but really, you know, the focus is on this pivotal trial. So, so as that moves forward, and, you know, hopefully successfully, we'll have opportunity to do even more with, additional products.
Quick question on that, because I can almost sense a bit of nervousness in your voice as you say that about, you know, the success of this one.
Yeah.
What will it mean to you if that is a success, to, you know, to bolt on to some of the previous successes you've had, you know, because this is, as you said, I think at the top of the show, you know, this is your baby now, isn't it?
Right. So,
you know, what will it mean to you as an individual if you can crack this one?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, you know, it's just different because I started at Tracon at the very beginning. And so, you know, it's like seeing your own child get married versus being, you know, seeing your niece or nephew get married, right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, both are important, but obviously, you know, you can't even put words to seeing your own child get married. So it's something that has kept me going at Tracon this whole time. It's, you know, I really want to see the company that I built from scratch, that I have put so many years and effort into, succeed. So, you know, and I feel really good about it. I'm really excited that we're working on this product, and but it'll definitely,
I think you summed that up really well, Bonnie. I like that analogy of, it's like watching, nieces, nephews or family members get married versus your own children getting married. I think that sums it up perfectly, because there's so many years that have gone into it, so to that to come off be incredible. But look, Thank you so much for sharing so much about your journey and successes to date, really. But look, before I let you go, we always close the show with a quick fire questions round.
Okay.
Now, you've just talked about kind of one piece of advice that you would perhaps give to your younger self. And that's something I often ask. So I'll perhaps try to mix that one up. What piece of advice would perhaps you give to your current self in pursuit of that goal that we've just spoke about getting this drug over the line and approved?
Yeah, take it one day at a time. Take it one day at a time, because it can be very overwhelming when you think of all of the steps and all the things that have to happen in order to file an application for a new drug. It is extremely time consuming. You know, and I have a family, I have little kids. So don't be overwhelmed by it and just take it one day at a time, because it'll work out. But just do it as much as you can do every day.
Loving that. A little bit of self-talk on the podcast. We've not had this before. Cool. And look, my next question, you know, I often listen to a lot of podcasts, tune into a lot of audio books, but look, for yourself, what's the number one book, resource, podcast, YouTube channel, whatever it might be, that you would recommend for our audience or that is your go-to?
Okay. Well, selfishly, I have to say that everybody should read Unnecessary Expense by Charles Sewer. I recently co-authored with my chief business officer and chief financial officer, along with Dr. Thewer, this book. It is about our industry. The proceeds from the book go to the company, not me personally. So it's not a personal thing here. But, you know, it does give you a lot of insight into our business and suggestions for, you know, how to do things better and more efficiently. Yeah, so, you know, that's something that would be helpful for others as well. I have to be honest and say, in my personal reading, in my personal time, what I really love to do is watch the Science Channel and, you know, watch things about things that are bigger than me, so that I know that my little role in the world is just what it is, a small role in this world, right? Mm-hmm. So my kids think I'm crazy, but I sometimes watch, you know, shows about black holes eating the earth or whatever when I'm falling asleep at night, because I find that very peaceful. They think I'm crazy, but it just makes me realize that there's just so much more out there that's bigger than me. So I'm more of a calm my brain person. Mm-hmm. In the evenings, for sure. But I love to watch science, because I really love science. So
awesome stuff. And yeah, I think with that book, we'll have to get that tagged when this podcast goes out, because I think there'll probably be a lot of budding entrepreneurs who are looking to follow in your footsteps. And that sort of thing is useful, right? Because you've been there, you've done it. You've perhaps gone through the challenges that they're going to face. Right. So look, it sounds like a lot of your success has been by doing things in-house, getting the right people. You know, I'm a big advocate of that because I'm running a recruitment business. But what are the top three qualities that you personally value most when putting together your teams? You know, skill set aside, because, you know, if it's data, you're going to need someone who's good at data. But, like, you know, in terms of their qualities and their values, what's most important for you?
I mean, I really love the interview process. I feel like I'm pretty good at picking people based on the interview process. I love it when I have a candidate who's, you know, kind of sitting on the edge of their chair, right? You can see they're eager just by their body posture. Those are the people that I know will be hardworking, and the people that I gravitate to. I also love hearing a little bit about people's personal experience, you know, and because it contributes to sort of their morals, and you can get a little glimpse into how they may be in your company. So I'll give away my favorite question, which I'm not going to be able to ask anymore after this, if people actually watch it before they interview with me, because they'll have their pre-canned answer. But, you know, I love to ask people what their first job was, because it's really fascinating to hear the different angles of people. And, you know, I worked at Baskin Robbins scooping ice cream, or, you know, I was a babysitter, or, you know, my first job, I was actually an internship at a veto lab or whatever. But it kind of, it gives me a good insight into people's personalities and to kind of understand them a little bit and their mm-hmm. background just by asking that one question.
Yeah. I think it's a good one, actually. We've not had anyone mention anything like that before, because, but it opens things up, doesn't it? And it brings out, when you're thinking about your younger self and what you did first, it just almost puts you at ease and you start just being a lot more natural. So I like that question.
Yeah.
I like it a lot. Cool. And look, for yourself, I mean, what's your favorite thing outside of work? Bonnie, if it's not science, if you're not doing science, you know, you're not chasing the pharma dream, what do you do to relax if you're not watching black holes eat the earth?
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, I had two kids, little kids. Mm-hmm. Well, one teenager and a son in third grade too. So my world is sort of wrapped up in them, and whatever sporting events or whatever's going on with them. And you know, I do really love participating in that stuff, because you know, life is just such a gift, and to see your children grow up and transition through this gift of life that we have, there's just nothing better than seeing that. Other than my children, I do love to garden. Already my daughter being 14, I'm already thinking about and worrying about the fact that she's going to move out of the house. And oh my gosh, what am I going to do with my time when I, you know, don't have all these sporting events and things to attend? So I told my husband that I would be taking over the entire backyard and planting my own garden so we can have our own vegetables. I don't have to buy them at the grocery store. I know they don't have pesticides on them. They're healthy, so I don't get cancer. So I'd say gardening is another hobby that I enjoy, and someday I'll get back to.
Amazing stuff. And look, to close the show then, Bonnie, what is your number one golden rule for life and business?
Yeah. So I kind of answered this one earlier, but I would say that nothing is consistent but change. So if you live your life knowing that change is going to come your direction and you're at peace with that, you'll be successful both personally and professionally. So accepting change. Yep.
Incredible. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's certainly done you no harm living that way, Bonnie, has it? So that is, yeah, good to hear. And look, for anyone, I guess, looking to reach out to you, I really appreciate you coming on the show, Bonnie. But for anyone looking to reach out to you to learn more about yourself, Tracon, your CEO, and the book that you're promoting, as I say, we could maybe get an affiliate link for you if possible. what's the best way to reach out to you? Websites, LinkedIn?
I'm on LinkedIn, of course, and it's Bonnie, spelled Bonne, no I mm-hmm. in my name. So if you look me up, it's Bonnie Adams. Via email at Tracon is badams@traconpharma.com. Either way would work.
Awesome stuff. Well, look, thanks again for being on the Huxley Morton podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much.